This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery, Landscaping, and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon to you, 4:06. Kyle Bailey with Mike Winters this afternoon on the cusp of the impending heat wave in the Umpqua Valley.
Yeah, right.
You've not heard the high temperatures coming up?
No, I have not. I heard rain was coming up.
We have a little bit of rain tonight, tomorrow maybe, but by the weekend, 85 Sunday, 90 for Memorial Day, 95 on Tuesday, 93 next Wednesday. I'm not kidding. It's right here on the forecast.
Well, you know, you guys are never right on that kind of stuff. So
now, why do you blame us when we are merely the messenger of information? It's going to be, starting Saturday, it's going to be in the 80s and 90s for like 10 days straight.
A pox on that. I don't want it, and I don't believe it. I'm not going to let it happen, so there.
You're going to stop the weather.
I am. I will. You can mark my
words.
You
have, ladies and gentlemen, 4:07 and 23 seconds. Mike Winters says he's going to stop the weather.
No, I'm going to stop the heat. Not the weather. The weather's fine. It's the heat that I don't care for. But anyway, this is a lawn and garden show, not a gypsy fairy tale. So
this is the official forecast.
Yeah, right. You guys, I don't know. You're never right. Okay? Never.
Why do you think they're starting fire season on Friday?
I don't know, because there's so many. I was coming in here, and there's some guy out there in Olala burning two brush piles, and so I drove down toward to make sure there was somebody there, and fortunately there was, and I'm thinking, why are you doing this, you know? And he was sitting there in his pickup truck, so I thought, okay, I hate smoke in the air this time of year. It's terrible. Anyway, welcome to the Lawn and Garden Show, where you can listen and ask questions, and I will give you answers. I will give you ideas. And if you should call 673-4464, we'll get you right on the air. And you can ask your question, and we'll shoot the breeze and see what happens.
You even have fake theories about weather.
I do. They're no more fake than what I hear on the radio. But at any rate, 673-4464. No, it's going to be quick, really. Anyway, I'm going to talk about garden dragons today.
What?
Garden dragons, you know, birds. Yeah, birds, but no bees, just birds.
I didn't know birds were ever referred to as dragons.
Well, you know, it just came to me as I was preparing my show and taking notes and things like that. And I thought, yeah, well, what would I call these guys? Garden dragons. I'm going to talk about hummingbirds.
Now, was that idea yours or one of your producers?
No, it was mine. Totally mine. So
okay.
There.
I mean, you've got producers and writers and people that work on this behind the scenes.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, right. But anyway, some birds are okay, and some are very amazing. Like a crow is an okay bird, but a hummingbird is dang.
Wait a minute. Why is a crow an okay bird?
Because they don't do anything but eat stuff and get in your way and make funny sounds.
Yeah, but they look threatening.
I know. That's why they're just kind of a, you know, an okay bird. They're not. There's nothing cool about a crow.
And they don't like pedestrians.
That's good. They don't like trucks that are driving down the road at 60 miles an hour either.
And when I'm out walking around Roseburg and I have crows that are essentially stalking me.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe that. I hired him to do that. But anyway. Anyway, this is about hummingbirds. They're dynamic. Hummers are attracted, of course, to bright, showy flowers. And they seem to favor hanging baskets filled with like ivy geraniums and fuchsias, verbena, and a whole host of other things. Too many to list here on this show. It'd take me an hour. But they can visit hundreds of flowers each day and suck the nectar right out of a flower. I mean, hundreds of them. I don't know what they do with it. Maybe they eat it all. Maybe they store some of it. I'm not sure. But they also feast on protein-packed spiders, as well as a variety of other small insects. And I didn't see the list of insects. But they're so quick that they're able to snatch insects right out of the sky as they're flying around. Those hummers just go boom, and it's gone. I mean, that's how they are. But, you know, there's several ways to attract them, of course, and this is where the plant thing comes in. They seem to, like I said, they love hanging baskets with well-placed hummingbird feeders next to the baskets or adjacent to the baskets, you know, and container plants on your porch or your patio filled with some flowers will also capture their attention. These guys are cool. I mean, the facts that I'm going to tell you a little bit later about them is they're amazing things. On my front porch, for instance, we have these hummingbird feeders, you know, filled with sugar water or whatever my wife puts in there, and hanging baskets in between. And the feeders are refilled almost daily, and there's two of them out there. And they go out there. I don't know what my wife's secret summer sauce is or hummer sauce is, but they sure like it. And what keeps the hummers close are the protection of the trees next to our porch. I've got a big blue spruce, probably 20 feet away from the hanging baskets and the feeders, and they make nests up in there during the summer. And there's no cat can climb this thing because Colorado blue spruce, the needles are very sharp, stiff, and you just can't grab them like you grab a fir branch or something like that, because they'll draw blood on you. So they're protected, and the needles and everything are very tight, so they can get into these really small places and build these teeny teeny nests as big as a half of a walnut shell, and lay their eggs and do all that and raise their young. Then they come down and eat at my place, and they're really really cool. But and then I have a two Japanese maples that are closer, and they're pretty good size and very full of foliage, and they also build nests in there, and it's a place where they can hide from cats and other bird lovers, you know, because my cat kind of stalks them, and she can't get up in the tree, and if she tried to get up in the tree, they'd, you know, bombard her or something like that. And most of our hummers go south for the winter. When it gets cold, they kind of disappear. There's usually about 20 to 25 of them buzzing around our front porch all day long, every day. Anyway, these guys, they disappear. As soon as it starts getting cold, they disappear. And then when spring, whenever that might be, they happen to know, they just kind of show up again. And but there are a few, in fact, I've counted two, that they stay through the winter. I don't know what kind they are, but they live in through Snowmageddon and all the rainstorms and all that. They don't mind cold. They don't mind the rain. They don't mind the snow. And but since there are no flowers that time of year, the feeders stay full at all times because they're feeding not as much in the winter, but they're still there. You know, a cloudy, rainy day, it's cold, it's like 35 degrees, and you'll see some motion out of the corner of your eye, and I'll look out the window, and there's one of these hummers in there doing its thing, you know, putting the food away. So, and like I said earlier, we have at least 20 hummers at a time flying around on our porch, and it's quite a show. And they're many different colors and sizes, and I have no idea. I'm not a clue as to what types they are. I'm sure someone out there listening would probably know that. Now, if you're diligent in your feeding program, hummers will make your home a favored destination. That's why I get all these 20 dudes back or 25 back every spring. They know we're going to feed them through the summer. And they'll come back to your place year after year and bring the whole family. And the family, you know, increases one or two each year. And another item on their agenda is a place to take a bath. So, if you have a sprinkler or some kind of a bird bath or something like that, or a creek, like my house is next to a creek, but they'll play in your sprinkler if you got one going, and you know, it can be water in your lawn and there's hummingbirds running through it or flying through it. So you can make your yard a hummingbird vacation spot, and all they require is food, water, and a tree to build a nest in and to hide in. So they're kind of really... They're very different bird, and if you've observed them very closely, and I have observed them very closely, I read the paper on the porch sometimes, and I'm sitting in a chair just right under the feeders, probably, you know, 6 feet away maybe, and all of a sudden, as I'm reading the paper, one will fly between my eyes and the newspaper, and it will scare the snot out of you right now, and it'll zoom, and then you, whoa, what was that? And it was a Hummer, and they've done it more than once, so it's really an interesting experience. Now, just because they're small doesn't mean they can't fend for themselves either. They're fast, they're quick, they're skilled acrobats, and they can move in any direction instantly. I've watched these things. They can fly backwards. I've seen them fly backwards. They can stop instantly and hoover in midair, and you know that's kind of a normal thing for them. They have incredible speed, and they can dive. I looked this up. They can dive at up to 60 miles an hour. That's how fast these things are. If they're up in a tree and they're diving down to your feeder, which I've seen, 60 miles an hour. I don't know how they measure that, but they do. And according
don't to... Don't they have an odometer?
Well, they do, strapped to their leg. kind of like guys that walk all over town do. But they also have a heart rate that can soar to 1,220 beats per minute while they're flying.
Wow.
Now, how they measure that, I have no clue. You know, and that's why they need a lot of superfood, and they have to eat every 10 to 15 minutes, something like that, to keep up their strength. And I also noted that there were 320 species found just in North America. So, you know, South America would probably have their own 320 species, and maybe China would, and maybe Vietnam would, and maybe Arabia would. I don't know.
Well, yeah, but are hummingbirds found in all those places?
Pardon me?
Are they found in those places?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they're all over the world. They're in every country in this world,
wow,
except Antarctica. They're not in Antarctica.
There'd be no place to land.
No. Well, if they did, there would be no flowers to, you know, get the nectar from.
Right.
So that's cool. But anyway, if you don't have a hummingbird feeder and you're interested, all you got to do is put it up. They'll come. You don't have to advertise it. You don't have to get an ad on KQEN or anything like that. They will. You put it up on your back porch or your deck or something like that and hang it in a place where a cat is not able to jump up to it. And the hummers will come. And once they start coming, and if you are consistent in your feeding program, they will adopt your home. They will adopt your porch or whatever, your deck. And maybe, you know, they've got several of you in the neighborhood that are probably feeding them. That's why some of them get too fat and they don't fly as fast. But at any rate, they're an interesting little bird. And I like I said, there was 320 varieties, I'm not sure. But the ruby throats, which are typical for here, well, they actually hang out naturally in eastern North America, and they're from southern Canada all the way down to the Gold Coast. So they're in Canada where it's cold, and they probably fly they fly down to Florida for the winter. I'm not sure how that works, but they do it, and they're amazing in that respect. Then there's the black-chinned hummers, and they range from British Columbia to Texas. Yeah, that's quite a range, British Columbia to Texas, to two different ecosystems. And the Rufus hummers, they're more like this Northwest North American kind of thing up in Canada and Washington, things like that. And then Anna's hummers, they go from the Pacific Ocean in British Columbia down to Arizona. So they're out there. You better watch out, and you'll see them. So, do we have a commercial? I think. How's that for time?
You've called for the commercial. The commercial we will bring to you. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show with the Commissioner of Dirt. 673-4464 if you have a question. Back in 2 minutes on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, 423, 75 degrees in the sunshine on the cusp of the impending heat wave in the Umpqua Valley. 673-4464 if you have questions for the Commissioner of Dirt. 673-4464. So one thing about hummingbirds, tell me if this is correct.
Okay.
If you start providing them the feeder, you need to keep providing them the feeder. They're not always adaptive to feeders that just suddenly disappear.
Well, they just go to someplace else and find a feeder. But they've got flowers, and they feed on the flowers. This is just like a supermarket thing, a feeder. You know, they don't have to fly all over the world just to play around this feeder. And but they, you know, they're going to get pollen from other flowers. That's the way they are. Plus, they eat insects. They do it. They survive. They've been survivors forever. And you know how they get to Mexico?
No.
They fly on the backs of buzzards.
That's got to be an old wives' tale.
No, it is not. It is not an old wives' tale. And where they winter? At the top of the San Pedro Matir Mountains in Baja Peninsula. That's where they winter.
673-4464. Let's go to the phones. You're on the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show.
Hello.
What's your question?
Hi.
Hey, I cut down my wife's peonies, and she's all upset about it, and I just wondered if they're going to grow back.
Well, you know,
we might direct you to the marital advice program later.
Did you cut them to the ground?
Pretty close, yeah.
Pretty close? Well, don't tear them out. Continue to give them a little water and maybe a little bit of fertilizer, and they might surprise you. I don't know for a fact if they'll come back. Most things I prune to the ground always seem like I'll always come back. Why did you cut them down anyway?
Because they were drooping pretty bad, and I was cutting a bunch of other stuff and kept moving down the line.
Oh, man, you didn't see them, huh?
Oh, yeah, I saw him.
Oh, you did it on purpose, huh?
No, I can't say that.
Okay. But it's a possibility. Go ahead and give them some fertilizer, some liquid fertilizer, and, you know, they may come roaring back.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for the call.
All right, hi there. You're on the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. What's your question?
I'm just calling to thank Mike. The topic of hummingbirds is one of my favorite things on earth. There was a fellow, Mike, did Jack May ever get a hold of you? In the course, he used to write into the paper, and he'd call into the different garden shows and up and on KPNW up in Eugene also. He was always trying to get people to keep, if you start feeding hummingbirds, you need to feed them through the wintertime too, because they'll think that you're their campground, and they're going to depend on you for that food when it goes away in the wintertime.
Well, you know, one thing I found out, John, is that certain varieties leave for the winter, and there's only a few varieties that hang for the whole winter.
That hang out, yes.
Yeah, and we do feed those that hang around. There's only like two or three of them compared to 20 or 25 of them in the spring and summer.
And thank you for saying that. Kyle, they do hitch rides on the back of buzzards.
All right, very good.
Thank you. Thank you for confirming that.
All right, thanks for being on this afternoon. 673-4464 if you have a question with the Commissioner of Dirt.
No, when I was doing research several years ago on hummingbirds and just kind of trying to get a handle on it all, there was a chapter or a page about how in the world do they get to Mexico. They fly all the way down there all by themselves? No, they actually ride on the backs of buzzards. It's whatever relationship that is, I don't know. And the buzzards go to Mexico every year. They go down to the Baja Peninsula, and bingo, there they are. And you know, it's an interesting thing. Yesterday or the day before, I had hummers on my porch, and I had a buzzard in my front yard, just poking around. I don't know why. It was quite a combo. I don't know if he.
Well,
just,
at your age.
my age. Okay. But if you want to do the hummingbird thing, it's interesting, it's fun, and you'll be amazed at what they do.
How often do you see buzzards, by the way?
How often do I keep buzzards?
No, do you see them?
Oh, every day.
Really?
Yeah, every day.
So that, again, at your age, I guess that would make sense.
No, it's they're out there. I mean, if you would get out and look up in the sky once in a while, you'd see them. They're not so much in town, but where I live, it's the country. It's the mountains. It's where they hang out. And there's always some up there in the air circling. Circling
okay.
and circling, looking for people that walk a lot.
Great. Once again, I'm in trouble.
I know, you are. You really are. So, at any rate, the second topic today is going to be about magnolia trees. Magnolia trees are quite a different tree, and they're worldwide, actually. And there are about 80 varieties that I found, but I'm not going to talk about all 80 varieties. There's just a few here that live in Douglas County and work in Douglas County. And they're the evergreen types with the large, glossy green leaves. You know, those great big leaves that are sometimes a foot long and 6 inches wide with giant white flowers that are very, very fragrant. And then they have the deciduous type. They lose their leaves in the winter, but have many different colored flowers in the spring. And you have white, pink, red, purple, yellow, all different shades of those standard colors as well. But they are very prolific. They're a very tough tree. People look at them and say, well, will that survive here? Yeah, they survive anywhere. They are just a really neat tree in a lot of respects. Now, both types will grow well in Douglas County, whether it's deciduous or evergreen. And on the, like I say, on the evergreen, the flowers are very showy and very large, very white, usually in the middle, probably the middle of June to the first part of July is when they bloom, depending on the weather. Of course, if this heat wave hits, they'll probably bloom earlier that Kyle's been bragging about. But at any rate...
I'm just reporting on this. This is not bragging.
Where do you get your news? Washington, D.C.? The White House? What?
This is not fake weather.
Oh, okay. Okay, whatever you say. We'll see, won't we?
Jeepers.
But at any rate, these white flowers are sometimes 10 inches wide, 10 inches across from one end to the other, and they're intensely fragrant. They're beautiful. They're not long-lived. They'll last for maybe a week, depending on their location. If it's in the shade, they'll last a little bit longer, but normally they're out in the sun because they get to be a big tree, and so consequently, if it gets hot, then the flowers have a tendency to fade more quickly. So the evergreen ones are, you can see them as you drive around Roseburg or, you know, Winston's, Sutherland, whatever. They're always green. They're always got these large green shiny leaves. And they almost look like a fake tree, but they're not. And they're very tough. They grow nationwide, and the frost doesn't hurt them. The snow doesn't hurt them. I mean, other than maybe break a branch with a lot of icy snow on it, but just the cold itself doesn't have any bearing on their overall health. But you can get these varieties at various nurseries. We normally carry, now we have probably 20 of the evergreen or 30 of the evergreen types in right now, but the deciduous types we only have maybe half a dozen at most, and we try to get the purple and the red or the pink, you know, something that's going to be really showy. And they are just they're just a nice tree. They're a tree that you don't want to crowd. You want to give it a lot of room, because the evergreen ones, they can grow as high, according to the literature I read, as high as 80 feet tall, and they can be 60 feet wide. I think that's probably more realistic in the southeastern United States, Alabama, Louisiana, Georgia, Florida, you know, where the temperatures are more temperate and growing conditions seem to be really good, except for hurricane season, and then that'll blow them away. But the ones around here, they're called southern magnolias or Magnolia grandiflora. And those are the ones with the big leaf, the big white flower, and they can be seen easily when they're in bloom, because you'd be driving down the street and it'll catch your attention, and you turn and there's this huge tree with huge white flowers on it, and it's, you don't forget them. But they are a messy tree, and I would say it's not what you want as a lawn ornament. You wouldn't want to put it in the middle of your lawn unless you don't mind going out and cleaning up after it, you know, once or twice a week. Because the flowers, when they start to fall, there's still some white in the petals, and they fall all over the lawn. And if you don't care, it's okay. Or you can mow them up. And then the leaves will drop for a prolonged time. They get old. They don't turn color. There's no fall color to them or anything like that. They just get old and drop off, and new ones are pushing their way through. So it's a constant cleanup in the spring and summer. But once fall hits, you're good to go for 6 months. So, and it's not all the leaves and all the flowers don't fall on the same day. But do we have a call?
We do. You're on the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. What's your question?
Hey, Mike, it's David again.
Yeah.
No cat question this time.
Okay.
And so it's about the magnolia tree.
Yes, sir.
So if you were to plant it, say, in your yard, or you were to be in an area where you want to have a sprinkler system, are you going to want to mound?
Yes. You definitely want to mound, and you definitely want to put some very friable potting type mixed with mulch or something like that. They have to have good drainage.
What does friable mean?
Friable means loose.
Okay.
Loose, like a potting soil. You know, if you buy a bag of potting soil and it's real fluffy and light, that's friable.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. But I always, you know, I don't plant anything in just pure potting soil, because it doesn't hold moisture at all. But that's why I combined a little bit of soil. If there's good soil in your yard, combine it, mix it very, very thoroughly, throw a little bit of bark mulch, old fine grind bark in there, and make a nice mix. So when you plant it, it gets its water, but it doesn't sit there, and it drains, you know, fairly quickly, but not instantly. And that's your best. Actually, that's your best mix for anything you plant in Douglas.
So there at Roseburg National Cemetery, next to the administration building,
yeah,
are those magnolia trees that are there
by the flagpole?
No, by the administration building.
At the VA.
At the National Cemetery.
Oh, at the National Cemetery. I don't know, but they're in front of the VA hospital. I know that. And
the ones that are there have you know, multiple branches or multiple
stems,
stalks,
trunks, yeah.
coming off, and then they seem to kind of cut them, almost top them, uh-huh. And then every year they kind of produce. They're sort of almost like a three leafs. Flower. Am I thinking of the right trees, or is that something different?
Well, you know what I'm going to do when I leave the studio today? I'm going to drive by and take a look. If you call next week, I'll have an answer.
Okay.
I don't know.
Very good.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for the call.
And back with more in a moment. The Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. Douglas County's Commissioner of Dirt, 436 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Mike Winters, Lawn and Garden Show, known throughout the region as Douglas County's Commissioner of Dirt.
Yeah, and you guys made that that handle up for me all those years ago and surprised me with it. And I had nothing to do with it. They made it up, and they coined that, if you will.
And it's stuck.
And yeah, people call me that all the time. You know, in fact, this morning I got a phone call from a guy I was supposed to go give a consultation to in Glide. And he calls me up, and I returned his call, and I said, well, how you doing? He says, is this the Commissioner of Dirt? And I says, yeah. He said, I listen to your program every week. I love it, you know. So we were friends right off the bat, and so I drove out and gave him a consultation and showed him how to fix his yard and all that. And, you know, it's amazing. There was I was in Albertson's. This is a few years back, and I'm standing behind a customer nurse, this young lady, say mid-30s, checking us out, and then I get up, it's my turn, and she says, did you get everything? I said, yeah, everything's good, I'm good to go. And she looked at me and she goes, oh, you're the guy on the radio. And I thought, well, yeah. And I thought, well, that's pretty good. Even younger people than me listen to my show. So anyway, thanks for listening. I appreciate it. It's good. It keeps me on my toes. I got to do more and more research all the time, so I just don't don't throw stuff out there. I just don't make it up, you know. I tell the truth, unlike the weather. But at any rate, I've been talking about magnolias.
I'm speechless, stunned.
I know. You're never speechless. Stop. Oh, jeez. But the southern magnolia, the Magnolia grandiflora, that's what you see around here for the most part, the big old evergreen types. And as I was getting into it, these are a messy tree. So, like I said, it's not a lawn tree. And it's also not a tree that you want to put next to a driveway or plant them away from any structures like your house, garage, streets, decks, because, you know, they're large and they're going to grow and they're going to drop those flowers and everything else. So this is a tree for a large yard. If you have a small yard, 40 by 20 or 30 by 40 or something like that. Let's say that's the backyard and you wanted a magnolia in there. You'd want to put it on the furthest point away from your deck or your house, and then you'd have to be looking at your neighbor and say, if I plant this tree here, will that ruin my neighbor's fence or will that do damage to my neighbor's yard? So you have to be real picky about this. You have to know what the actual growth rate is going to be. And like I say, on the southern magnolia, the ultimate height is around 80 feet. Well, we won't live long enough to see an 80-foot magnolia, you know, if we plant it. And supposedly 60 feet wide. But that's what the book average talks about. And since they are such, and if you put them in a lawn, again, you're going to have problems, but they're very very heavy shade producers because of the big leaves. Not a lot of sunlight gets through to the ground. So if you have a lawn, you put it in a lawn, and not only do you have the mess, et cetera, but the grass in that lawn is going to be deprived of a lot of sunlight. So you'd have to make sure you had a shady grass mix in there that would survive. And the other thing about the magnolias, their roots are surface type roots. Not all of them are right on the surface, but they're just right under the surface. So any water or fertilizer that you're giving your lawn would be the lawn would be on the tail end of the feeding trough, because that magnolia root system would suck it up a lot faster. It's a lot larger than a lawn root, so consequently the lawn loses and the magnolia wins, and it's growing 90 miles an hour and it's looking really good, but the lawn is suffering greatly. So you can find a balance, but normally I would plant it, like I say, farther away from the house. I would plant it in a place that was just mulch with maybe some other trees, small trees, shrubs, Japanese maples, things like that, could be, planted in the same area, because they don't need a lot of care. They don't need a lot of water. They don't, they're just a good tough tree. There's the maintenance you have to think about, and the root system you have to think about. And then, like I say, it's so vigorous. If you planted it near a driveway, it'll actually root under the driveway and lift the pavement, and it does the same thing to sidewalks. So I don't know what it would do to your foundation if it was too close to the house. but it's just don't plant it close to anything. It's definitely for large yards.
Isn't that an issue with a lot of different plants where people like the way it looks now but don't think down the road?
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's why you have to educate yourself. And when you go to buy a tree at a nursery or a box store or something like that, try to get as much information, you know, from the person that's selling it. Hopefully that person knows what that tree does. We certainly do at Wintergreen. I mean, we can explain all this. And when I'm waiting on customers, you know, I tell them how to water it, how to plant it, how large it's going to get. Don't plant it near your driveway or don't plant it near your house, because you're going to have leaves in the gutter. You're going to have gutter problems if you ignore it. And you had some at your house, and we cleaned out your back gutters that one year because of that one tree. That's a magnolia, by the way.
The one behind my house?
Yeah, that hangs over your roof. Yeah.
Which area?
In the back part would be north. North side of the house.
Oh, okay. On the side of the house that I never look
yeah,
at.
Yeah, that side.
Except when I'm mowing.
Yeah, exactly. But at any
not
rate...
I'm not sure why I have grass over there anyway.
Well, I wanted to surprise you, so I planted a bunch.
No, it's always been there.
I know. And your yard is relatively shady, your backyard.
Right.
And I'm surprised that the grass does so well back there with the amount of shade that it gets. So... you must take care of it just like a pro.
Well, of course. But no, the sprinkler system certainly helps.
Yeah. And if you actually fertilize it once in a while, it even gets stronger and better and develops a better root system.
Need to fertilize.
Yeah, you want me to write that down for you?
Yeah.
I can do that. Anyway, deciduous magnolias, of course, the ones that lose their leaves, they're a little less work. But when the leaves fall, you have a big pile because they all come down at once.
And the phone call has come in. On the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. What's your question?
Mike, please forgive me for calling in a second time.
You have a question?
I was going to ask Mike if he could think about featuring a series of scented trees like the magnolia, the tulip trees, and the various things like that. The scent of those wonderful blooms are just so important to me, and people would really enjoy them.
Okay, well, John, I'll see what I can come up with. How's that?
All right. Thanks for the question there this afternoon. That's an interesting concept.
Yeah, it is. And you know, it's amazing. That's a good point. It's because there are lots of trees that have a very strong, sweet smell to them. And some might not be sweet, but they still have an odor, but it's not unpleasant. And then there are some trees that have a very unpleasant odor. So, you know, we could do a show just on stinky trees.
All right, back with more in a moment. Mike Winters, Lawn and Garden Show, Douglas County's Commissioner of Dirt. Back in 2 minutes on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
The afternoon report coming at 5 with Douglas County's news team at 77 degrees, heading for 90 degrees on Sunday, 95 degrees early next week.
We'll see about that. Anyway, you can take that from the Commissioner of Dirt. Okay. Now, I've been talking about magnolia trees, and I've said it several times. They're tough, and they do well. They do very well here in Douglas County, and all they need is a good draining type of soil, and they like an acid type soil, which Douglas County primarily is an acid soil base, and I mean, it's all over. It's just natural because of all the trees, etc. And if you want to enhance that, the potty mix, and I talked to that one gentleman just earlier, that means a lot of old bark mixed with potting soil, and maybe some peat moss and some natural soil all mixed together, so you can't tell what the difference between the bark and the soil. It all looks the same, and it's nice and fluffy. That's the kind of potting mix that you want to have when you plant a tree, a shrub, a flower, anything. Okay, and since the root systems are near the surface, add a little bark every other year to keep the roots cool. I mean, they're right there on the surface. You can walk on your lawn if you have a lawn and you've got a magnolia tree. You can feel the roots under your feet. So and if it's really, really hot, if it were to get to whatever Kyle degrees said, it would enhance the tree to have a little, maybe 2 or 3 inches of additional mulch over, just to keep the roots cool. And if the roots are cool, the tree is okay, it's great. Now, watering is critical. Deep watering is the best, but not often. On average, say twice a month in the summer, a good deep watering. And it's really important for the first 2 years. Once they've been in two full seasons, two full summers, two full winters, they're pretty much rooted in and ready to go. You can't totally neglect them. If you get a 95 degree stretch of days where it's dry and it's hot and it's windy and it's sucking a lot of moisture out of the leaves, yeah, give it a good deep soaking. And a deep soaking is like, 10 gallons of water, or put the hose down and let it trickle for 15 minutes, so it really gets down deep and penetrates into the root zone. And then when you're fertilizing, of course, you fertilize with a well-balanced tree food at least twice a year, early spring, late fall. And if the leaves begin to yellow up during the growing season, add another fertilizer application in midsummer, because that means it's hungry. That means it's losing its vitality, and you can spoof it up by giving it an additional fertilization. And if you really want to do a good job at it, you get a fertilizer that you mix with water, and you can pour it directly in there, and it's like eating a Snickers bar if you're really hungry. It just pops you right out of the box, and that will help it. But it's not a long-term situation. It's a quick fix. And midsummer would be okay, like, July, August, something somewhere in there. Now, pruning on deciduous magnolias happens after bloom time. They bloom. If you want to prune it, shorten it, thin it, whatever, let it bloom. Blooms die off. Go ahead and prune. Now, with the evergreen types, winter or late fall is the best time. And prune to shape the tree, remove any wayward limbs that are growing at odd angles or longer than the other, so you can kind of shape it and bring it into some sort of conformity. And take out all the small twigs that are not really producing flowers or leaves and they're kind of half dead. Take them out, and what that does, it also enhances air circulation. So it's anytime you have good air circulation, good drainage, and a well-fed tree, you're going to have great success. It's not going to be suffering from anything. And again, we talked about this earlier. Choose your planting site carefully. Don't plant a tree where it's going to, cause your future problems and you might have to take it out. Because once they're established, they are difficult to transplant to a new location. Let's say you had a magnolia in for three years, and you say, oh, gosh, I guess it's too close to the fence or too close to the house. I think I'll move it over there. Well, magnolias are harder to transplant than, say, maples or firs or something like that. So make sure you eyeball your yard and look at it and say, where would it the best place be? Maybe get some professional help and say, hey, I'd like to plant a magnolia in that spot there. What do you think? And the tree person, the expert, and it can be a tree company, it can be a landscaper, it can be a nursery guy, whatever, or your neighbor down the street who has a very nice yard. And it's something that you want to make sure you're not going to have to remove it or prune it significantly and ruin the shape of it, and that could be a problem. Any flowering tree, of course, needs to be planted in a location that best displays their color and their shape. You don't want to kind of jam it into a corner somewhere. You want to see the branching. You want to see the flowers when it's blooming. I have three flowering cherries in the middle of one of my fields, and I planted them like in an island setting, and I've got two Kwansan cherries and one Mount Fuji cherry. Mount Fuji is white blooms. Kwansan is hot pink. And what a contrast and what a beauty that is. But I put them in a place where they have plenty of room. I mean, the branches, they're in a trio, and the branches are intermingling, but then I've got the white and pink blossoms all kind of mixed together, and it's very, very attractive. But on the outskirts of the tree, they have plenty of room to grow. And so you just want to make sure that, yeah, I got, I'm giving it room. It can grow, and it's not going to be it's not going to be jammed up into a corner, and I have to do some kind of weird pruning thing on that. So, again, the magnolias can grow up to 80 feet, but there are many varieties that hit, you know, 20 or 25 feet. And for the smaller yards, that's what you want. And when you're shopping for magnolia trees, read the tag, ask the questions of the salesperson. Hopefully they know. But better yet, with our technology, look it up on your magic phone, and it'll give you a lot of good information and probably some photos of it. Now,
wait a minute. Did you just recommend the use of the internet?
I know, the magic phone, whatever that is. Is that the internet? Oh, gosh. My flip phone doesn't have that.
Oh,
but
boy.
At any rate, the star magnolia, a smaller magnolia.
There are two flip phones left in the county.
I got one of them.
Yeah, and Dale Cranford is the other.
The star magnolia only grows 10 feet tall on average, and it's very attractive with white flowers. It blooms early spring before the leaves appear, and they are very, very fragrant. The flowers are shaped like stars, hence the name, and it's just a beautiful small tree. As in any landscape, you know, think about this. Planning the process, take your time, look at your yard, try to get a feel for a magnolia or any other tree. Look around in your neighborhood, see, you know, with a critical eye. Are there too many plants too close together in Mr. Smith's yard? Why is that? Because they were small when he put them in and didn't think they were going to grow, probably. But anyway, that's the scoop for today. Thank you for listening. Hope you learned something.
Where do people find you?
Here I'm sitting in a chair for crying out loud. Highway 99, south of Winston. Look for the big green roofs. We're the best nursery in the world, and we know more than anybody else.
And you're humble.
And I'm humble. I know more about trees than anybody else, okay?
All right, back next week on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It is 5 o'clock.